Hello, everyone out there in Toronto and beyond. My name is Carl Ozowski, and you are listening now to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. On today's program, I'm really excited about this, actually, because I'm always excited when we get a chance to speak with someone who has something to say about some animals that we may not have covered on the program before. And today, I'm really excited that we're going to be speaking with Maria Pandolfi. She is an amazing woman who runs an organization in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA, called Rat Chick Rat Rescue. And they're involved in rescuing rats and adopting them to loving homes, rescuing them from such industries as the feeder industry, which breeds and creates many, many thousands, maybe millions of rats per year to essentially feed them to other animals, exotic animals that people keep as pets, like snakes and other such beings. So we'll be speaking with her at about the quarter past the hour mark. But before we do that, as always, we're going to get to a little bit of news. And as you heard in the ads before the show aired, we're coming upon the spring fundraising drive. And that means that Animal Voices is going to be participating in the fundraising drive as well. So I just wanted to direct people to the CIUT website, CIUT.fm. That's www.ciut.fm. And we are looking to meet a quota of 10 donations of $25. For $25, you become a member/supporter of CIUT-FM, and you help us reach our seasonal quota. And I just want to say I understand that $25 is a lot of money. It's definitely a lot of money for me, and I'm assuming that it's a lot of money for you out there listening as well. $25 could buy you a lot of vegan cheese, or enough, you know, if you're me, that would buy you enough produce to last a week. Or it could buy you a big tofurkey to share with all your friends. But we're asking you to consider making your donation of $25 to the program so we can keep promoting things like tofurkey and produce and vegan cheese. So please do check out the website, www.ciut.fm. There's a little donate button on that screen. And when you donate your $25, please do let them know that your favorite program on CIUT is Animal Voices. And if you'd like to check out our website, we've got a little fundraising pitch on there with some clearer instructions on how to donate. And just so you don't think we've been kind of sitting on our laurels for the last 6 months since the last fundraising drive, we've got a list of shows that have happened in the last 6 months that may motivate you to donate. If you want to see this kind of programming continue, please do check it out. We've interviewed Elizabeth Scholes and Will Potter about legal actions and legal precedents. We talked with Miriam Jones about cockfighter rooster rehabilitation. We talked about online and offline activism with Peter Young in the lead-up to the Utah fur anti-fur convergence. We talked to Julie Woodyer from ZooCheck about the ongoing case of Lucy the elephant. We talked with Jen, Save the Chimps' Jen Feuerstein, about the great chimp migration that's happening currently between Alamogordo, New Mexico, and Fort Pierce, Florida. We talked with local activist Bob Timmons about his endless ocean activism and the seemingly endless amounts of energy that he has. We talked with comedian Mike Kaplan about vegan comedy. We had actually a live via satellite phone interview with Lawrence DeGroot from Sea Shepherd Antarctica Crew about the ramming of the 80 gill. We had an interview with Gary Francione about the current state of abolitionism. We talked with Igualdad Animal's Sharon Nunez about open rescues. We talked with M. Firesmith of the Canadian Animal Liberation Movement, or CALM. We talked with Ken Bontius and Helen Brancic from ARC2 about ARC2's 25th anniversary. And we also talked with John Fitzgerald about hair coursing in Ireland. There's a couple other shows that we don't have on our website yet that are on their way. So please do check out our website, www.animalvoices.ca. And again, please do consider making a donation to the show, CIUT.fm. Click the donate button. Do it. Now some news. The first story coming to us via the Dominion Post in New Zealand. The headline is Concern at Extreme Animal Rights Website. And this seems a little bit more relevant these days, especially considering cases such as the Shack 7 case in the U.S. goes a little something like this. High-profile supporters are backing away from an animal rights website amidst concerns about extreme content that calls for vigilante justice. Paw Justice is New Zealand's fourth largest Facebook group, with more than 56,000 fans. It was set up to, quote, help deal with the problems of animal abuse and neglect. TV advertisements that promote the group, featuring Shortland Street and Outrageous Fortune actors, direct audiences to the Paw Justice website, which has a link to the Facebook group. Comments found on the page include calls to shoot, castrate, and rape animal abusers and feed them to animals. National MP Simon Bridges, whose private bill to increase animal cruelty sentences is before a select committee, is a former friend of the Facebook group. He has labeled the material extreme and distanced himself from it. Quote, I defriended them because I wasn't comfortable with what was going on, he said. I saw comments that seemed to be akin to vigilantism, and as a former criminal lawyer who believes very strongly in the criminal justice process, I didn't want to be a part of that. Paw Justice's website claims to have SPCA, TV3, and Māori Television among its sponsors. TV3 and C4 are considering asking the group to remove station logos from the Paw Justice website. One former fan has laid complaints with the police, Facebook, NetSafe, the Charities Commission, TV3, and the SPCA. Quote, it just seems off the wall that nobody seems to realize that these comments are out of hand, the complainant said. The Facebook comments are moderated or edited, but the complainant said the Paw Justice moderators had no moral compass and, quote, not only allow abuse, but they seem to encourage it. At what point does a charitable organization become accountable for a situation like this? They are inciting violence. But Paw Justice, set up by stuntmen Craig Dunn and Sean Campbell, says its campaign aims to promote good pet ownership. Quote, you're going to get extreme people from time to time who just want to mouth off, Mr. Dunn said. He had deleted abusive or inflammatory comments and emailed, quote, a handful of people who used profane language, banning one person from the website. Mr. Dunn said fear had to be instilled in people to stop them harming animals. Quote, if you hurt an animal, you should be afraid, and why not? People's pets are their children, and people want their eye for an eye. This country is very lenient on animal abusers. Mr. Bridges said that though he had seen Paw Justice comments claiming involvement with his bill, they had no part in its writing. Quote, initially their goal seemed very much aligned, but it wasn't long at all before I realized it was all a bit extreme. SPCA national boss Robin Kippenberger said she would be talking to Paw Justice about the inflammatory comments if they weren't substantiated. Quote, it's not the SPCA's view. What we want is justice, not revenge. TV3 and C4 spokesman Roger Beaumont said the stations had, quote, no formal sponsorship agreement with Paw Justice. The actors from Outrageous Fortune and Shortland Street could not be reached for comment, but South Pacific Pictures spokeswoman Tamar Munch said the studio, which represented them, would recommend Paw Justice, quote, reevaluate its approach, end quote. And it should be interesting to see how this story progresses, given that in North America we've had people incarcerated for making similar comments on websites, and whether this will kind of bring Facebook into that whole miasma of legal issues. The following story isn't exactly a news story, but it is a press release from the North American Animal Liberation Press Office, and this is definitely good news. It's dated March 26, 2010, and the headline is, Animal Rights Campaigner Set for Retrial in Firebombing Case. An animal rights campaigner jailed for a firebombing plot against Oxford University is to be retried after his conviction was overturned at the Court of Appeal. Mel Broughton, aged 48, from Northampton, was jailed for 10 years at Oxford Crown Court in February of last year after a jury convicted him of conspiracy to commit arson. It was alleged Broughton of Semilong plotted to cause fires at Oxford University in 2006 and 2007, but the animal rights campaigner always argued that he was no more than a peaceful protester. He appealed against his conviction earlier this year, and after taking more than a month to consider the verdict, Lord Justice Thomas returned to the Court of Appeal yesterday to quash the conviction. The judge, sitting with Mr. Justice Kitchen and Sir Geoffrey Grigson, said there had been an error in the way that the trial had summed up the evidence to the jury, which meant the conviction was unsafe. He said, quote, although the judge was correct in admitting the DNA evidence before the jury, we quashed the conviction on the basis of a misdirection. The judge ruled that nothing more of his judgment could be published, then ordered Broughton, who was not present in the court, be retried on the allegation as soon as possible. Broughton is a well-known member of animal rights group Speak, and was accused of allegedly being behind the planting of homemade petrol bombs at Oxford University as part of a quote-unquote terrorist campaign against the building of a research laboratory. Two improvised devices, constructed with fuel and a fuse made from sparklers, exploded at Queen's College Sports Pavilion in November 2006, causing 14,000 British pounds of damage. And I have to say, for one, that I'm happy that this conviction was overturned. I've reviewed quite a bit of the quote-unquote facts of the case, and I'm not a legal expert, but it is, in my opinion at least, very much a case full of holes. I do strongly encourage people to check out all the information that's out there and form their own opinions about this, but one of the good places to start, at the very least, to get one side of the story is the Animal Liberation Press Office. It's www.animalliberationpressoffice.org. Please also do go to your Googles, type in Mel Broughton, B-R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N, and see what comes up. He's been campaigning for a very long time, above ground and legally, for the stopping of the Oxford Animal Lab, one of the biggest animal labs in the UK. Please do check it out. And that, my friends, is the news for today. On today's Animal Voices, I'm really excited to have our next guest on the show. I've been following her work for a little while. We get press releases from her organization, and I'm always really happy to hear about the work she's doing. Her name is Maria Pandolfi, and she runs an organization called Rat Chick Rat Rescue. She is also a member of the North American Rat and Mouse Club. As of April 2005, she has found more than 100 wonderful adoption families for rats, and here to tell us all about why rats may need adoption and what exactly is Rat Chick Rat Rescue, we're joined with Maria Pandolfi. Maria, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really excited about doing the interview. I think it's more like 1,000 by now.
Okay. We're going to get to the numbers in a little bit because I think some people may be surprised at just how many rats there are that need homes and that need adoption. So we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I wanted to just start by maybe getting you to tell us a little bit about your background with animals. How did you first get into animal rights and how you came to love rats so much?
I'm so sorry. My principal is making a long announcement in the background. I'm at school right now. I guess I was raised to be a very compassionate and humane person. My father always said, treat others the way you wanted to be treated. You know, I was taught the golden rule was the most important thing. And my father has been vegetarian since he was 6 years old. So I think that I always had a love for animal rights and human rights, and then it developed into becoming a member of different animal activist groups and them doing work on my own, and that developed into Rat Chick Rat Rescue.
And was there a particular incident that sort of brought you into caring about rats in particular? I think for many people listening, it may seem, as far as a particular animal to have such an affinity for, it may seem like an odd one.
I only know that it's an odd one because of other people's response to
right.
me when I tell them I have a rat rescue or that I even have companion rats. I got into rats because back in college and undergrad, I had a friend who had a hair salon. It was this punk rock hair salon, and all the hip people went there. Someone brought her rats that were rescued from the Academy of Natural Science. They were supposed to be snake food. And she had all these rats in her salon, and everyone was talking about the rats in Cynthia's salon. And I thought, you know, big deal. I didn't have this fear of rats, and I think it was because I grew up mostly in the suburbs. I think when you grow up in an urban environment, you have more of a fear because you don't only have that media thing going, but seeing wild rats and, you know, your mother saying, get away from that, you know, whatever. But what happened was I went to get my hair cut, and they were really cute, and I just fell in love with them. And I could tell that they have an emotional bond to people, and they were really intelligent. So I asked if I could take two of the babies. She had males and females and didn't know how to sex them, so she had babies at that time. And I took two boys. I went directly to the how-to bookstore in Philly and bought a book about pet rats, and then the love was just immediate. Mm-hmm. And I have had rats since, and then I started. Eventually, it turned into the rescue, but it was kind of an accidental thing.
Now, I'm going to put myself in the mind of someone who's driving around in their car right now around Toronto, and they're listening to this interview maybe by chance, and they're thinking, why would anyone want to rescue rats? Or why would anyone want to have rats as companions? They're supposed to be pests, aren't they? Maybe you could tell us at least what you think are some of the misconceptions about rats that people have, and maybe what some of your favorite things about rats are.
Okay, well, people say you dirty rat, rat think, you know, rat is considered a negative word.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, all these things that people think about rats are completely false, and rats are the opposite. So I'll tell you why, I'll tell you the selfish reasons why someone will want a rat. Someone will want a rat because they are loving. As soon as you walk into the room, they get really excited and they run over to you. If they're not in the cage, if they're in the cage, then they stand at the bars like jailbirds, and they're just like looking at you with their little hands on the bars like, take me out, take me out. They clean themselves more times a day than a cat, so they're very clean.
Mm-hmm.
They could be litter trained. They're great if you live in a small space because you don't need to have a lot of room for them. People compare them to dogs that don't have to be walked. They're just, you know, they're cute. I know people don't understand that, but they're really, really cute.
I think it's hard for many people to imagine rats as being cute because most of the rats they see are on the street. You know, anytime I'm in New York City, I see rats, and they're totally covered in soot, and they're in the subway. And those are really the only rats I see. But the other day I was actually fortunate enough to go to someone's house who has some companion rats, and that they were incredibly clean and, like you're saying, very affectionate.
Well, you know, if we lived in the subway, we'd be dirty too, you know?
Yeah.
You have to just be logical about this. I was also raised to be very logical. You know, you have to consider. A wild animal is a wild animal. A companion animal is a companion animal. A wolf is an animal you don't want to make into a companion animal. It's the difference between a wolf and a rescue dog, you know? It's like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to stay away from wild animals, and animals that have been domesticated by humans, they want to be with us.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they want to be with us. Even a wild rat. See, I guess the thing is, I did a rescue 2 weeks ago of 18 rats, and this lady brought me the rats because her daughter insisted that she bring them to me. Some of them were snake food, and some of them were pets, mm-hmm. which I can't understand that either.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, what were you doing with the rats, even though I knew she was feeding them to the snakes? I just, you know, I wanted to question her so her daughter didn't get in trouble, and then I wanted to give her a piece of my mind. But she said to me, well, the white ones I was feeding to the snakes. And I said, well, why weren't you feeding the other ones to the snakes? She said, because they're pretty.
Mm.
A lot of people think the white albino rats are ugly and the rest of the rats are pretty.
Mm.
And I said to her, not to be disrespectful, but you or I would not win a beauty pageant. Does that give someone the right to do something bad to us? You know, and it's just, what is beauty? I question that. We have an idea of what beautiful is, and I think it's really wrong. Beauty is what's in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And with wild rats, I've never seen anyone that's ugly, to tell you the truth. So I don't think even the wild rats are ugly.
You mentioned a couple times the labeling of some rats as snake food. Could you tell us a bit about the breeding and feeding industry?
Okay, well, there are mass breeding facilities that rats come from. I've never seen one, so I can't say that they're all the same. But of course, you know, I believe breeding of animals is horrible because there's enough animals that need homes at this point. And I do not believe in rats being breeded for food. But there are mass breeding facilities, and from what I know, they're really horrible. The rats are kept in small, confined areas, and they're waiting in their own excrement, and then they get put to sleep and frozen. Then there are people who breed in their homes for snake food, and that's pretty much the same thing. They're not thought of as sentient beings. They're thought of a food source for the snake. Snake people, I saw a documentary about snake people Sunday on Animal Planet, and they were saying that people who have reptiles really don't see them as companion animals. They see them more as a collection. And I don't really think reptiles should be in the home. I think that they're wild animals. There's been a lot of incidences lately where snakes have caused problems because the person doesn't want the snake anymore and they just let them out in the wild and they're taking over and killing other animals. So I think that the whole rat breeding industry is really wrong, and I think that it should stop. I've seen snakes eat rats on YouTube mm-hmm. because I want to educate myself in every way before I make a decision on something. And mm-hmm. it's horrible. The snake strangles them first, and mm-hmm. they scream and gasp for air. It's a really scary thing, and they know what's happening to them. You know, in the wild, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you stick a rat or a mouse or any animal in a cage with a snake, to me, that's like sticking us in a room with a serial killer who's armed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have no way to escape. And is it our right as human beings to do that to an animal?
Mm-hmm. I have to say, when I was about 10 years old, I had a friend whose brother had a python, and I watched him feed a mouse or a rat to his python once and never watched it again. It was definitely one of the most horrific things I've ever seen. And they don't necessarily feed them in the same tank that they hold them in normally, because then mm-hmm. the snake can't tell the difference between when it's feeding time and when it's not, because many people like to handle their snakes as well, and so they will bring them out into a special cardboard box that indicates that, okay, now it's feeding time, and they'll put a rat with them. At least this was how my friend's brother was instructed to do this by whoever he got the snake from. And so, you know, the rat goes into the box with them. The rat is clearly terrified, you know, like urinates and defecates out of fear. And then within short order is killed. And it's one of those experiences that stayed with me for a really long time. And one of the things that struck me was how small this rat was. Do you have a sense maybe of how old they are, or? Because rats generally live between 1 to 2 years?
Yeah, sometimes 3.5.
And so do you have a sense of how old they are when they might be bought? How does this
breeding cycle? Depending on the size of the snake, you go to pet stores and you'll see they'll have rats in cages and mice in cages, and they're marked small, medium, and large.
Hmm.
I mean, it's horrible. And there was a snake person who said to me, oh, rats are disgusting. They defecate everywhere. And I said, well, you know, that's their defense mechanism. They'll do that before they bite.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put them in a cage with a snake, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And really, these people who do this, they actually get a thrill. A lot of them get a thrill out of watching this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll even allow children to watch it or get their kids to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really desensitizes you to life and death and mm-hmm. what's right and wrong. And just being a humane person, it's a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we could shift the conversation over from this sort of grim specter of the feeding and breeding industry and talk about Rat Chick Rat Rescue. How did it start, and how long has it been around?
I'd say it was a slow process. The rescue started when I went into a pet store and they were selling rats for snake food. And I tried to convince the guy to stop doing that. And he said, oh, I know it's wrong, but people want to buy them. And I just thought, what? You know something is wrong, but you'll do it anyway just because you can make a profit off of it. You know, I tried to explain that to him, and he didn't want to hear it. So he was closing his store down, thank God. And I said to him, well, you know, he had a sale on the rats. They were going really cheap. I said, why don't you just give them to me? And there were 40 of them. And he said yes, which was like, I was glad, but at the same time, I was like, oh, no, what am I going to do with all these rats?
Right.
So they were in aquariums. They were really dirty. The white albino ones, the young girl who worked at the store said, well, I don't even touch them because they're disgusting. And they were scared to death. I took them home. I cleaned them up, and of course, I started to treat them with kindness, and they just absolutely were so grateful, and they became wonderful rats. And they were the first rats that I found homes for. That was about, I'd say, 15 years ago now.
Do most of the rats that you get come from sort of breeders or pet stores or that sort of thing? I guess I haven't really asked you about the animal testing industries as well, which I'm sure use many, many rats and mice. Is that somewhere where you may rescue rats from as well?
Oh, yeah, we do take rats from laboratories. Not as much now because we've been getting so many from, you know, people contact me on the email or call me about rats that need homes. So the Humane League of Philadelphia is run by Nick Cooney, he's a great guy. They take more of the laboratory rats, and then sometimes if I have room, I'll take some from them. We get rats from, let's say, someone will buy a rat from the pet store. And what happens is the rats in pet stores are kept, the males and females are kept together because to them, they're just breeding to sell for food.
Right.
So someone says, oh, I rescued a rat from a pet store. And when I hear that, I cringe because you didn't rescue them if you paid for them, you know? And so they buy a rat from a pet store and, of course, it's replaced with another rat that's just as nice, doesn't stop the industry, and then that rat is pregnant. So they have all these babies and they contact me for homes. Sometimes it's people who are breeding for snake food. Sometimes it's people who are breeding, quote, fancy rats and, you know, the ones that they don't want. We'll take, I have to give a lot of lectures and talks to people, adults, and sometimes teenagers who have animals for the wrong reason.
So we have a bit of a sense of what the animals who are coming from pet stores might have been up against before they got to you. Do you ever get, I guess, some background on some of the rats that come to you from laboratories? Would you know what they were involved in beforehand?
Unbelievable story. I'll tell you a story that's unbelievable. I'm doing a series of paintings right now. I'm an artist too, and an art teacher, but I'm doing a series of paintings of rats as saints and martyrs, part of my Catholic background. There was a rat that came to me a long time ago. She was from one of the pharmaceutical labs. They were done their research experiment. They put them in a vat and gassed them and froze them. And the crematorium came to pick them up. And when they were about to incinerate the vat of rats, they heard scratching inside. So they opened it up and she was still alive. So they brought her to me and I named her Lazarus because she came back from the dead. And they told me this happens all the time. Labs don't see them as, they see them as a tool for science, you know. They don't see them as having feelings. They also, rats, mice, and birds are not covered in the Animal Welfare Act. So things can happen to them that you can't get away with other animals. And that's all based on the prejudice.
Do you find that the rats are still accepting of human contact after something like that? I mean, that sounds pretty horrific, and I imagine that if the only humans that these rats have had contact with throughout their short lives have been humans that have essentially made a living from abusing them, I would imagine that they would be wary of people.
Oh, yeah, they totally see humans. They humans are cruel to them, you know, and they associate human hands with being hurt. So when they come from bad situations, you need to work with them. So what we do is what we call force handling. So what I do is I pick the rat up with my hand over his or her body, kind of like cup them up so that they can't reach your fingers because that's what they're going to bite. Once you pick them up, when they're biters, they don't bite. It's the fingers coming towards them that freak them out. And their eyesight is very, very poor. So they just see these things. So what you have to do is you cup them from the top, pick them up, and you just hold them really close to your chest, like right up against your chest, so they can hear your heartbeat and they could get your scent. And you just pet them and say really nice things to them. And if within a month, I've never had a rat that would not come around. They absolutely love humans, and it's so sad that they are so forgiving of us, because we don't deserve it.
You mentioned on your website, and we talked about earlier, that you've adopted out 1,000 rats over the course of your, let's say, career doing Rat Chick Rat Rescue. What is the adoption process like? How do you sort of vet people for being good candidates for adoption, and what makes a good rat guardian?
Well, we have a Pet Finder account. So you could go on Pet Finder and see who we have up for adoption. And then the next step is filling out an adoption application. And the most important thing is a vet reference. You have to have a really good vet reference, and I also have to see what happened to your previous companion animals. Like, did they get lost? Did they die, of a disease? Did you give them away, And the only thing that I accept is if they were, if they got sick and they died. I won't adopt anyone who gave a pet away. Mm-hmm. I won't adopt anyone who lost a pet.
Mm-hmm.
After the application goes through, the next step is an interview over the phone. And then once you've passed all that, then you could come over and meet the rats.
What does the meeting of the rats look like? How do you introduce someone to a rat?
Well, these are people who really want to meet a rat, and a lot of times they've had rats before. Oh, I also do not adopt breeders. But when they come in, all the rats are virtual shelter. So all the rats are in people's homes. So let's say they come to my house and they're interested in one of the rats that I have. They come in and I'm very friendly, unless you're herding rats or animals.
Right.
But I'm very friendly. They come in, we introduce ourselves. I'm like, hey, you want to meet the rats? And then, I introduce them to the rats. They meet my rats. They see how my rats, how I handle my rats and how my rats are kept. I ask them questions. They ask me questions about rat care. And then they take the rats home. I call them in about a week and ask them how they're doing. A rat caretaker should take the rats out every day for at least an hour. Cage has to be cleaned once a day. They need fresh water. They need rat food, pellets. There are pellets that they sell. There are lab blocks. There are feed mixes. There are these other things that are like little rat food that's shaped like little hearts. So they have to feed them that every day. Rats will not overeat like a dog will. They'll only eat till they're full.
Hmm.
So I give them, and I tell other people, give them, the rat food, the rat chow, and then fresh fruit and fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
I'm vegan, and besides that, meat is not good for rats either. They need a very low-fat diet, so it should mostly consist of grains, fruits, and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask, maybe, are there any common misconceptions, or if anyone's listening right now and they're thinking of going and adopting rats or finding rats that have been rescued and taking them into their own home, what are maybe some of the common mistakes that people make?
Oh, well, one mistake is a lot of people think you pick them up by their tail, and that's really, really painful. I actually infiltrated a lab a couple years ago, and I couldn't believe I was shaking by the time I left because of the way the scientists, they didn't know what the hell they were doing. They were doing all these wrong things. They were saying things that weren't true to the science teachers that were there, supposedly learning about animal research and animals. But, they were picking them up by their tail, and, people in pet stores picking them up by their tail, and that's something that you shouldn't do. Of course, you should never do to a rat.
Mm-hmm.
People think rats eat cheese. Rats shouldn't eat cheese because it's high in fat. And I guess people don't realize how social they are, and a lot of people say, do they bite? And I'm like, no. Rats bite food, and that's it.
Right.
Unless they're abused, severely abused, they don't bite. It's rare to have a rat bite. As a matter of fact, if you look on our website, there are all these rat facts. And it's so much more common to get a dog bite than a rat bite. A dog bite could actually kill you. According to the CDC, the most anyone has ever had to get due to a rat bite were stitches.
Maria, part of the reason I brought you on the program this week was because we received an email from you on your email list telling us about the most recent sort of update with the Rat Chick Rat Rescue organization. Maybe you could tell us about the current situation at Rat Chick Rescue, how you came upon this latest group of rescued rats, and how people can either become involved with helping out in this current situation or in the future, and maybe with how people can start an organization like this where they are.
Okay. Well, more than a week ago, I got an email from a young woman. She's a teenager, or maybe about 20 years old, and it was about her mother breeding rats for snake. she's the one who said the white ones are ugly and the other ones are beautiful. She said her mom had these accidents, horrible conditions, the cages were really dirty and all that stuff, which everything she said was true. And she brought her mother to me and made her give up her rat. There were 18 of them. So they had mites. We gave them, we used Revolution for mites. So we did the Revolution thing. And they were all posted. They're posted already on our Pet Finder account. And then someone who adopted from us 2 years ago, she contacted me, and her sister had seen on Craigslist in North Jersey that there was a guy who was selling rats for snake food or pets, and they were $3 each, and at the end of the ad it said, if they don't go by Friday, they're going in the freezer. So she asked me to help her with that, and of course, when I go say, you know, I have to. It's not like I choose to do this. It's kind of like I have to do this. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't, I'm not going to be able to sleep at night. So we went there, and I used my teaching skills, and I got him to give me not just the 20 rats that he was trying to get rid of, but I told him he had to give me all the rats. He had 2 rats for pets, mm-hmm. and he said, do I have to give you my pets too? I said, yep, sorry, we're taking everybody. I said, if you don't do it, we're coming back. I said, we're going to bring more people. We're going to have a protest. And I said, do you have a job? He said, well, I have 2 little jobs. I said, well, you know what? You're not going to be able to get a job after that.
Wow.
And I told him a lot of stuff that he wasn't going to be able to do if he didn't let me take the rats. And he let me take the rats. I would like to go back to get the mice because there's like 60 mice, but I can't find anyone to take them. So if I could find someone to take the mice, we'll be going back to get the mice. If someone wants to help out, we have pretty many fosters right now. Maybe a couple more fosters. We need forever homes for everybody. We have like 3 forever homes so far, and we have 83 rats at our rescue. Mm-hmm. We also, you know, if you have any cages, water bottles, bowls, you can send them to us. We have a P.O. box. If you'd like to make a donation, a monetary donation, we are a 501c3 organization, and we take donations too. We need donations for medical care, you know, and all that stuff.
So,
food.
So how can people get in touch with you? If they can make donations, or how can they contact you?
Our website is www.ratchickratrescue.com. My email address is mariap@ratchickratrescue.com. And my phone number is 215-917-4261. So any of those 3 ways will be fine.
Excellent. And we'll post all of those things on our website as well. So if anyone has, in the Philadelphia area, anyone has cages, or if they can adopt rats into forever homes, please do contact Maria. Again, that's www.ratchickratrescue.com. mariap@ratchickratrescue.com. Please do get in touch with her. I wanted to ask you, maybe you could reflect on this a little bit in the last few minutes of the show. What has been the reaction from other animal advocates about the work that you're doing? I remember when I was volunteering at the Toronto Humane Society for a while, feeding kittens, and I remember really clearly one day that a squirrel came in that had been hit by a car or something like that, and they were being cared for in a different part of the Humane Society compound. And the people in the kitten nursery were really upset that a blanket was being taken from the kitten nursery to be used to help out the squirrel. They just thought, oh, it's a squirrel, and it doesn't matter. Ever since we've gotten emails from you, I've always been curious to know, what reactions have you gotten from other animal advocates? Is it generally supportive, or do you get kind of like questions like, why would you care about rats?
Well, it varies. Most people are like that. I think with like rescue groups that aren't animal rights groups, and you know, I just can't understand. Rescue groups have events and they're having like a cat and dog rescue event and fundraiser, and it's a beef and beer. You know, it's like people think, this animal is an animal you pet. This animal is an animal that you watch at the zoo or at the circus and is entertainment. And this animal is wild, you know, and this is da, 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 da. But, with the rescues, I know, like, the big rescues in Philadelphia, if they get rats, they contact us. So we'll go there, and nobody wants to touch the rats. They're afraid of the rats. They don't have the right bedding. They don't have the right food. And, you know, there's, like, maybe one person, if the rats are lucky, that's going to be taking care of them. So we really, really have to take them when we get those calls. With the animal rights group, I think people are more open-minded because animal rights people are more likely to be for all animals. But even some animal rights people are kind of like, you know, rats, you know, and they'll even say, do they bite, you know, and are afraid to pick them up. When I go to the vet, I sometimes have people say, what do you have there? And I say, a rat. And they say, ew, that's disgusting. So I got to the point now where I say, well, what if I said that about your dog, you know? And then they say, well, you know, oh, I'm sorry, you know. But I get that all the time. It upsets me. And I guess I take it personally because I just can't understand how I know facts about something or about these creatures. They're facts. They're not false beliefs. It's not my imagination. But there's so many people that don't want to listen to me or want to say, you're crazy, or, oh, that Maria, you know. Even friends that I have for years, they just can't understand why I'm rescuing rats. Teachers at my school, my principal's great, but the teachers just think that, you know, there's some teachers that think I'm insane. It's sad. I bring them to school for the day, and the kids are wonderful. They love them, and they say, Miss Pandolfi, when are you bringing the rats in? And I say, well, you know, it's the same as any other prejudice. Once you get to meet them, they're great, you know, and I explain prejudice towards other human beings through the rats. It's just, they're wonderful, and I just wish the world would see them as what they really are, who they really are, then so many things would change for them. But until that happens, it's not going to change, and I have all this work to do.
Well, Maria, I thank you so much for the work that you do, and thank you so much for being on the program on such short notice. I know that it's an incredibly busy day for you, and also a very busy time for the Rat Chick Rat Rescue, so I really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. I strongly encourage anyone who has listened to this interview to please check out Maria's website, www.ratchickratrescue.com. There's tons of information on the site, and there's information about how you can get in touch with Maria to help her out, and she's got a lot of work to do, so she could use some help.
I need help.
Thank you so much for being on the program, Maria.
Okay, thank you so much for your time, and thank you everyone for listening.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We were just speaking with Maria Pandolfi, the organizer of Rat Chick Rat Rescue in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for listening, and coming up next is Dos Mundos. Stick around.